Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey, what is up, everyone? Welcome to the Crack House Chronicles. I am Donnie, your host, and with me is a man whose sex tape is just a video of him trying to find the end of a roll of scotch tape.
I didn't know where he was going. I was trying to find the end. Apparently, you've been watching me try to unroll that damn Dollar General postal tape.
Oh, yeah. But trust me, there's a lot of dirty talking with it.
A lot. Probably could hear it from there.
That's the outer space.
Ooh, yeah. That stuff. Stay away from that stuff.
What's going on, dude?
It's no bueno. What's going on, man?
Ready to record an episode?
Yeah, I hope so. It's been a long day. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, it's been a long week.
Yeah.
It has. It's been rough. You got any shout-outs for us?
We got one couple here. Maybe more than one. We got a shout-out to Gwen for giving us an idea to do the show we're going to do today. Appreciate the cool recommendation on the subject we will cover today. And I want to give a shout-out to Melissa for the incredible interview we had last week.
Thank you, Melissa.
That was awesome. And shout-out to Kim Poole for being such an awesome fan and doing all the work you're doing to help us out.
And above and beyond, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Way. And shout-out to Angie out in Texas. We've been thinking about you, buried in the snow and froze up and all that mess, and we hope you're all right.
And just thinking a few more months, you'll be complaining about the heat.
Yeah, and flies and stuff.
Yeah, flies and skeeters and gnats and bugs and
all that good stuff.
Snakes. I guess y'all got armadillos out there.
Armadillos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Armadillos.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know what they have in Texas. We have possums out here.
Yeah, it's naked armadillos.
Yeah, and skunk.
Yeah.
It must be skunk breeding season right now.
I hate a damn skunk.
God almighty.
Scared to let the dogs out. They come back with all that perfume. It's not good. And it's happened before.
It ain't good at all.
No, not at all. But, we appreciate you, Gwen, for giving us a subject today. Today we are going to cover...
Yep. We are going to cover Brenda Ann Spencer.
Couldn't.
Yep. And if anybody don't know who Brenda Ann Spencer is, just a little bit of background on her. She was born on April 3rd, 1962 in San Diego, California.
San Diego.
Yep, to parents Wallace Spencer and Dot Spencer. By all accounts, Brenda when she was younger, she had a pretty decent childhood.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. Involved in a lot of sports. She was doing photography, a lot of different things.
Yeah. Yeah, she was like into softball and golf and stuff. You know, her dad was in the, what was
it? He was an audiovisual specialist.
Right. Something like that. So he was doing that, and her mom was going to school to be an accountant. And when she got that going on, she'd done some accounting for a lot of big firms, including the one with the golfing
game. Yeah, the Andy Williams golf tournament.
Right. So she had them all into golf and stuff and then playing junior golf tournaments. And she was competing pretty high level on those.
Yeah, for the younger groups, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pretty good childhood. I mean, just going back to that, she did. She was until her parents split up.
Well, Wallace, he got a drinking problem, you know. He started drinking a lot, and nobody really knew it except for their mom. And then I think he started messing around while he started drinking. And he came home with a weird proposal once.
Yeah, he had a weird plan. He he wanted to...
He wanted to take a year off.
Yeah, take a year off from the marriage and be allowed to come back after a year.
Yeah, he wanted to go and have a bachelor pad for about a year and do what he wanted to do. And he asked Dottie, reckon that'd be all right.
Yeah, I mean, that takes some balls right there, man.
What did Dottie say?
No. She went and filed for divorce the next day.
Yeah, it didn't work out too good.
No. No. But he ended up with custody of Brenda and her two older siblings.
Right.
She had an older sister named Teresa and an older brother named Scott.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that the father gets custody, but what had happened is the judge had asked the older kids who they would rather stay with, and they picked the dad, so he didn't want to break up all the kids, so all of them got sent to Wallace.
Yep, and there's not much detail on the older kids at all. We'll refer to them a little bit, but there's not much information on them. But, you know, like I said, our story is on Brenda and what she did and everything. And it's going to be a pretty interesting story the more we get into it.
Yeah, I hope so.
It was even reported at one time during her childhood, she was in a bicycle accident. Smashed her head into a pole or something.
Pretty serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And said she'd blacked out and was
kind of woozy.
And woozy for a few days.
Right. That's been a hell of a pole.
Yeah. And it had been reported that her mom didn't want to take her to the hospital, and her sister, her older sister, said that they don't know if she took her or not.
Well, she said she's going to, but nobody ever knows if they went, as far as we know.
But anyway, the next few days, Brenda seemed to be back to herself.
Right.
Brenda had a fancy for shooting guns.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they split up, her dad, he bought a house about 12 blocks from where they lived, and then so I guess the older two kids were doing stuff, so him and her would go do some stuff, and he liked target shooting, and she fell right in because she was really good at it. She would go out and shoot her BB gun, and she was really good at it.
Yeah, he bought a house in the San Carlos neighborhood of San Diego, California.
Right. Yeah.
And this was 6356 Lake Atlan Avenue.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's like a three-bedroom house, one-and-a-half bath, just a small, I think a little over 1,000 square feet house.
Something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I actually looked up this house a little bit ago before we got started on this episode. And Dale, this house is not very big, but it's valued at $680,000 today.
Sure. Crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just packed in on top of houses. Oh,
you can literally stick your hand out your window and shake your next door neighbor's hand.
Yeah.
It's just that tight. It's like 0.12 acres.
Wow.
Yeah. Just a little over a tenth of an acre.
Nothing like here, is it?
No.
No.
Not with our sprawling mountain
views
we have here and stuff. Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, her and her dad, they had a lot of hobbies together, and also photography was one, and he would take her to zoos and out to the woods and stuff and for photography, and then they would go out in the desert and stuff and shoot a lot.
I think they would go out there with they had some friends that lived close to the Mexican border, and they went down there. It was a desert area. And they would go down there and shoot at targets and cans and things, and Brenda actually got pretty good at shooting.
Really good.
She was actually better than her dad's, what had been reported.
Yep. Even her dad's friends, they all said they were pretty, almost expert marksmen, and she was better than they were.
Yep. Now, it had been reported too that in her younger childhood, she had a neighbor friend. I think his name was Brent Fleming, and he wasn't too cool of a guy, I don't think. They'd even said if the devil had shown up, it'd look just like Brent.
Right. He was a couple years younger than her.
But still mean as a snake, they said.
Right.
and doing all kinds of things. And there was one time that they got in trouble for shoplifting.
Well, he got in trouble for shoplifting. She was outside.
She was an accessory.
But when he come outside, he goes, she's with me. So he kind of shit her on that one.
Yeah, threw her under the bus with him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was another time when Brenda was living at this Lake Atlin house, the school across the road, it was Grover Cleveland Elementary School, which is going, we're going to talk about a little bit later too. But I think he had went there earlier and busted out some windows.
Yeah.
And he took Brenda over there, and they went over, done some vandalism and different things. And I think she'd even shot it up with a BB gun.
Yeah.
Shot some windows out and done some damage that way. And she got in trouble for that.
Got in trouble for that, too.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, after a couple of these incidents, her dad told her he didn't want her hanging around with him no more.
Yeah, but Brenda's, I think she was the type that was more of a follower than a leader. Anybody that, you know, that she seemed impressed by, she would just sort of fall under their wings and,
well, she was a more of an introvert. She didn't do much of nothing, really. She didn't have a lot of friends, and, you know, so she just come home, and I guess somebody would take up to her, and then she was just going to follow right along.
Yep. And really a tomboy type. Real skinny, and she had bright red hair. So just if anybody wants to look Brenda up while we're talking about this, just go ahead and look her up.
Check her out.
Yep. Yeah, she's quite an introvert, no doubt. And shortly after they got busted for this school vandalism, I think Brent moved away.
Yeah, and Brenda's dad was pretty happy about
him leaving. Yeah, yeah, because her grades in school started improving, her attitude improved, and
yeah, a lot of things changed.
Yeah, she seemed just to be a more of a well-rounded kid.
Right.
Yeah.
She liked to hang out in her house and jam to records and do her stuff.
Yeah,
and
she liked rock and roll. She liked Alice Cooper. She liked
Kiss. Liked there was several other bands that were mentioned that she liked, but I think her and
Britt Fleming,
yeah, they always listened to Alice Cooper Killer album.
Yeah,
it was big on the Dead Baby stuff and then Kiss records and stuff like that. Then I think after for so long, you know, she started getting a little depressed.
Yeah.
And so she was seeing a counselor at school and some other stuff. And I don't know if this is because her buddy had moved away or just other things happening in general, you know, because she started bragging to her friends that she was doing drugs, and she was always on some kind of hard drugs, saying she was like doing heroin and this and that and the other. But well, I think most of that was just
talk.
Yeah.
And she got to talking about how she hated cops. Yeah. Anybody in authority, she hated.
Yeah, and said, you know, one of her favorite TV shows was SWAT, you know, but they always pulled against the against the cops.
Yeah, hoping the cops would get shot.
Yeah, and her and Brent always talk about taking out the pigs, you know, and that was back in those days, pigs was just another word, or slang word for cops, you know, and his stepdad was a cop, so he probably had a little hatred going on for that. So
probably.
That was probably where all that came from. But after, you know, the counselor, she talked to him, them, whatever, and they advised her to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah, they knew she had some stuff messed up.
There's some deep stuff going on here, yeah. And so she went and talked to them, gave them a couple pages of notes and stuff, and they basically just said keep seeing the counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a big deal, but it was.
Yeah.
So I think they even pushed her dad to do a little more, but he kind of just swept it under the rug. It's basically like he didn't want to see it.
Yeah, because her dad was still drinking and stuff, and he, you know, he was working. He didn't really, single dad, he didn't really care.
Right.
You know, what his kid's done.
So after a time being, her buddy would call some, and then one day he asked if he could come down to see her. Wallace thought, man, what the hell? She's been doing pretty well, you know, and she's been feeling bad, so maybe he would let Brent come down. And so Brent rode his bicycle an hour down to come and hang out for the day.
That's dedication right there.
Yeah, so they come down, hang out for a while, and then they went out and done some stuff, and then came back and said they'd sit around and listen to Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Babies album for a while, and then he made the trek back home.
Yep, hour back.
Yeah,
by bicycle.
That's a long damn ride.
Yeah, just to listen to Alice Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah, because they weren't romantic. They were just friends.
Yeah, they were just really good friends.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd come down on a weekend. I think it was a Saturday or something.
Yep.
And I guess she got to talking big again, and she mentioned to Brent that she was going to do something big Monday.
Right. But, you know, he also said that they always had these weird plans they would make, you know, and even one of her girlfriends had mentioned that they'd done the same thing, that they would always talk about how they were going to take out a pig, you know, and how they were going to do it. They would egg his car or something and make him chase him in the bathroom and then kill him with an axe and,
yeah.
or a sniper or whatever. It was just always talk, but then this time I made it a little bit different.
Yep. And like I said, Brenda was very influential as far as, you know, people.
Influencing her.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, easily influenced. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Yep. And Dale, it was in 1978. This was Christmas. Brenda's dad, Wallace, gave her a Ruger 22 semi-automatic caliber rifle with a telescopic sight and 500 rounds of ammunition for Christmas. So, you know, she was into shooting, target practice and all this stuff. So that was a pretty big deal. She had asked for a radio that year.
I've heard both ways where she begged to have a rifle and then she begged to have a radio. So I guess we don't really know what the hell happened, but she got a rifle for Christmas.
Yep.
The Ruger.
Now, we're going to get to the crux of this story, Dale, and why we're talking about Brenda Spencer today. All right. And this was on a Monday morning, January 29th, 1979. This is the day that she told Brent Fleming that something big was going to happen.
Right.
She's going to do something big. And she had asked her dad, well, she didn't really ask him. She told him that she wasn't feeling well that day.
Right. Said she had always had a problem, like with a period, being some really severe cramps and having to even stay in the bathtub all day long sometimes. So
especially the first couple of days.
Yeah. So he said he had got up to go in there and wake her up to go for school. And to his surprise, she was already up and dressed.
Mm-hmm.
But she told him she wasn't feeling well and wanted to know if she could stay home that day because she was cramping up and just didn't feel good.
Yep.
And he said, sure. So he left and went to work.
Yep. And Brenda stayed at home that day.
Yep.
And this was when she busted out the window.
Yeah, it was on those front doors where, you know, it's wood at the bottom and the top has got, you know, several small panes of glass.
Yeah.
And she busted out two of the lower ones right at the where the wood went into glass.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she just, she busted them out with the butt of a rifle.
Yep.
And started shooting.
Yep. Now, this is about 8:30 in the morning, and we did say it was an elementary school right across the street.
Yep. And if anybody wants to look this up, this is her address was 6356 Lake Atlin Avenue, and this is in San Diego. So you can look at Google Earth today and see what it looks like, but right across the road now there are houses.
Yeah.
But then it was an elementary school.
So basically what was going on is parents were pulling up with their kids and starting to drop them off. And they were waiting for the principal to come out and unlock the gate. So they were lining up at the gate, getting ready to go into school.
So kids were just...
congregating.
Yeah, coming to the school. I guess some kids walked there.
Yeah, probably.
Some kids being dropped off.
Because it's a lot, you know, a little... like you said, those, you know, houses are all tight there, so...
I think this was a pretty small school. It wasn't like, what,
300? Yeah, 300 students.
Yeah.
And that was just a K through 6th grade. With 13 teachers, so...
That's still small.
Yeah.
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 Like a little neighborhood school, I guess.
Right.
Yep. But anyway, Brenda started shooting.
Yep. Yeah, she just went ahead and started shooting. And it's, you know, just so you know, we're talking about shooting kids. So if it's something you don't want to listen to, then we understand. So, but anyway, right off the bat, she just starts popping rounds off. In the first couple shots, she shot a 9-year-old.
Well, they thought they were firecrackers at first, didn't they?
Yeah, firecrackers are, you know, it's always the backfiring car that nobody ever hears now then. But I guess in 79 or late days, it was always backfiring cars because you always hear that.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, like the first couple shots, she hit a 9-year-old girl named Monica Selvig and shot her in the side. And she shot an 8-year-old named Mary Clark, who was shot in the abdomen. And she kind of really freaked her out. So she just kind of got up and... It knocked her down, and she got up and went to class.
Yeah,
and sat down because she was freaked out and didn't want to say nothing. She didn't know if she should tell or not. Didn't know what was going on.
I think she was too scared to tell anybody.
Yeah, and then also the next shot round was an 8-year-old Craig Vernon, who was shot in the butt. So looks to me right now she's shooting, but she ain't shooting to kill. Now she's still shooting. So. Now, maybe she is, maybe she ain't, but, you know, it was really put over how good a shot she was. So,
you know,
we don't really know what's going on here. And then, you know, subsequently, an 8-year-old named Crystal Hardy was shot in the wrist, and it just kind of went straight through her wrist. And then a 7-year-old, Audrey Stites, was shot in the elbow and just basically just started walking in circles because it just basically put her in shock. She didn't really know what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. And it's about before, you know, right in here somewhere is when the principal heard what was going on and jumped out and ran outside.
His name was Principal Rag, and he was 53 at the time.
Yeah, Burton Rag. He was a World War II veteran. And bad thing is, man, he only been working there a couple months. The guy retired the year before, so this is January, so I guess he started probably in August or whatever it is. And he went running out there to help Monica, the first girl who was killed, or not killed, but shot. And went out there, and he was shot in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down. And they said the bullet lodged right near his heart. And so while this is going on, bullets are still flying everywhere, shooting out windows. You know, don't forget, she's at 700 rounds. Now, they said the rifle only holds 10 shells in her magazine or whatever. So she would have to shoot 10 and then reload and shoot 10 and reload. But I'm sure she was pretty good at that, too.
Yeah, she'd had a lot of practice reloading that
thing. Right. And then once they seen the principals down, you know, another guy, Daryl Barnes, had run out and saw him and kind of freaked out when he seen the blood coming out of his chest, because then they knew what was going on, or kind of knew what was going on. They didn't know where it was coming from, but they knew something was going on. So, and he ran over and grabbed a girl and took her inside. And as he went in, I think that's when the custodian, Mike Sukar, he was also a World War II veteran and a Korean War veteran. He was 56. He grabbed a blanket because he knew that Mr. Rag was probably going into shock if he was still alive. So he took a blanket and run out. When he did, he was shot in the back and took him down.
Yep.
So right now we got kids laying around. We got adults laying around. What's going on? And Daryl Barnes had screamed them, you know, for them to call the EMTs, or I mean, call the cops. And this is he started at 8:30. So the cops don't get here till it was about 15 minutes.
Close to 9 o'clock, probably. Right.
So by this time, he's already shot Julie Roble in the side, and Christy Buell was shot, and Charles Miller was shot in the back, and it went out to his chest.
Yeah.
It almost killed him. It was about an inch from his heart, I think it was.
Yep.
And so in about when the cops finally got there, it was Robert Robb and his partner Dennis, what was his name? Dormus?
Yeah.
Does that sound right? But Robert was fresh out of academy, and he went out there and jumped out and tried to help the principal. And when he did, he was helping them. Well, actually, when they pulled up, EMT rolled up right behind them, so I guess they got the call at the same time.
Yeah.
And so he was run over to the principal and went to help paramedics load him up, and all this time bullets are still flying. And so he's helping him load, and he feels a shot shoot off of his bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh shit. So he helps him load him up and put him in the ambulance. And then after he gets that done, he starts feeling a tingle in his arm and in his hand. Don't know what's going on. And then figured out that what happened is that bullet ricocheted off of his vest. It went through his neck.
Yeah.
Went and lodged, like an eighth of an inch from his spine. So I guess it was kind of like a paralysis kind of setting in.
Yeah.
But I guess adrenaline was pumping so hard at first. So but then I guess he went down.
Yeah, he went down.
So after this, she's still shooting, and the bad thing about this, Donnie, is, you know, bullets are flying everywhere, and one had either hit the fire alarm or they had set the fire alarm off.
And I believe she probably hit that on purpose.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Somebody said it was just a random shot, but I don't think so.
She was such a good shot.
But what happened is, so now the kids, you got to think that the kids are still getting dropped off. It's still early. Nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And the kids are flipping out because the fire alarm is going off, so they don't know if they should go in the building because the fire alarm is going off, and they can't stay outside because somebody's shooting. So it's just a big old cluster going on out there, and it's really, really scary. It's got to be.
One little story about this, the Mary Clark, I think she was one of the first victims hit. Her sister, she was a little bit older, was walking her to school that morning, and she said Mary had gotten a little bit ahead of her, and Mary had gotten on into the school when she got shot. There was an adult there at the gate and turned her sister, Linda, back around, told her to go back home.
Right. She was running just late enough.
Yeah, not to be in the crossfire.
Right. It's crazy. Yeah. So after all this is going on, you know, she's continuing to fire. And eventually they would find out that she fired like 350 rounds.
Yeah.
So they'll just tell you how many bullets are whizzing by these people out there trying to help other people. And it's just going crazy. And there was a security guard and I think another police officer had noticed that the trash truck was making its rounds down that street. So they had an idea.
They're going to commandeer that trash truck.
Right. So they run down there and commandeer the trash truck and then pull it up, jump the curb, and up on the thing and into the bushes between the house and the school.
Yeah.
Essentially blocking off any gunfire.
Yeah.
So she just started shooting the truck a lot, you know, because she was pissed off. But nobody else got hurt. He climbed out the passenger side and eventually saved a lot of lives.
Oh, yeah.
So now we got she's got blocked off with the trash truck. So eventually we're going to have over 100 cops show up, you know, and 30 different cop cars and 20 SWAT team members are coming in.
Trying to figure out where the shots are coming from.
Right. And, you know, they said that there were some reporters down at the police station. And when they heard it start going on, they told them to see if they could find out what's going on. So what they did is they all started calling phone numbers of people's. They were looking up people's names who lived on that street.
Yeah, right near the school.
Yeah, just to call, see if I could figure out what the heck's going on. And as luck would have it, the first number the guy dials is Brenda's phone number.
Yeah,
she answers the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And basically she goes, you know, guess what's going on? You know, and she gives her name and her age. And he asks, oh, do you know what's going on? Did you see it? She goes, oh, yeah, I saw the whole thing. He goes, oh, really? So he's thinking he's got a scoop here.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, yeah. And he asked her something else. And she goes, no, she hung up on him. And they call back. And he goes, well, wait, so-and-so, you know, whatever. I tell you where the shots are coming from. They're coming from, and she gave him the address. And he goes, well, wait a minute, isn't that your address? And he goes, yeah, well, who do you think she's doing the shooting? And hung up on him again. So it's pretty damn weird here.
And then they asked her, tell us why you're shooting.
Yeah. And what she said.
And that's when she said, I don't like Mondays.
Yep.
This livens up the day.
Yep. Crazy.
Yeah.
And then she said something about she had taken some downers and smoked some pot. And
I think she was talking big, too.
Yeah, and drank some whiskey and all this mess. But, yeah, I don't think. Which, you know, even later they checked her and everything come out negative. So I don't think she was doing anything. I think she just.
They said she didn't have anything in her system.
No.
After she was apprehended.
Right.
But it was several hours went by, almost 6 hours, before they was able to get in there and get her.
Yeah. You know, they kept calling back and talked to her, and finally they told the reporter, don't call anymore, we want to call. So, you know, with the SWAT thing going on. And she knew how everything worked, just from, you know, SWAT was her favorite TV show. So they pretty much surrounded the house, and then she would tell them, you know, you need to back off, you're about to piss me off, I'm gonna start shooting, and I know I got me a pig.
Yeah.
And that was her thing. I know, because she'd shot that one police officer in the chest, or in the vest rather. And I think he tried to get her to give up, and she never, well, first he was trying to get a hold of her, and then he couldn't get a hold of her for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And they was like beginning to wonder, did she run out the back? Did she get away? They don't know what's going on.
Because mm-hmm.
they never really could see her. And they couldn't, in the way the house is, the garage sticks out farther than the front door. So they couldn't really get where they could get a good shot without being directly in the line of fire,
yeah.
you know, to take her out. So they begin to wonder what happened. And finally she answered the phone after 3 hours. And nobody knows really what she was doing during those 3 hours. And
no, they don't.
And he asked her, you know, if she needed anything, and she said she'd like to have a Whopper from Burger King.
Yeah. And she was promised a Burger King meal.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And said, you know, I'll get that for you if whenever you give up, you know. And she kept on, and she was like, she'd kind of want to give up, and then she'd back off. And then finally she's like, you know, she says, well, I'll think about it. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll call you back in 20 minutes and get you an answer. So now he thought he'd already broke her down far enough she was going to give up. So he called back in 20 minutes. She said, no, I don't think so. I think I'm going to get my gun and start shooting some more.
Yeah. And then she'd also told the police negotiators that the children and adults were easy targets.
Yeah. Like shooting ducks on a pond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think when, you know, when he called back and she said, you know, no, I'm going to, but she never did shoot anymore, you know, after that, after the first thing to put the trash truck out, and she never shot another shot after that. So we don't really know what was going on. But when, you know, when a reporter called her, she was wanting to know if this was going to be or for a newspaper story, she was wanting to be famous.
Yeah. That was her thing.
Yeah. And she was asking the police negotiator, you know, as the TV crews out here, or if you come and get me, are you going to take me in handcuffs? Because she wanted, just like it was on TV, that's what she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually he talked her into giving up her guns. Well, and the way she done that, you know, I know we didn't say nothing about earlier, but she was big into animals and pets and stuff. And I think at this time she had a dog and she had a rat and a snake as pets. And she kept, you know, was telling the negotiator, you need to tell the swabity guys to get back before I start shooting, because I know if I shoot, I've seen on TV that they'll shoot back and they don't miss. Mm-hmm. And maybe was she wanting them to kill her, or was she just talking more mess, you know?
Yeah.
So he said, well, I wouldn't do that because I don't know, you know, I won't be able to stop them anything if you start doing that. She said, but I think you need to think about giving up, because the SWAT guy's going to shoot in some tear gas, and that's really going to hurt your animals.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of hit her in your soft spot there. So she decided that she was going to give up then, and he told her to come out and bring her rifles out and lay them down. And so she brought her BB gun out and her .22, laid them down. And then he told her to get all her ammunition, which didn't make much sense to me. No. So she had to go in the house and find all them boxes and bring him out. And then she came out and laid down, two SWAT guys took her in with you know, she didn't resist.
No.
But, it, you know, all said and done, she had shot over 350 rounds. She had injured 9 children, and the 2 adults eventually died.
Yeah, that was the principal, Burton Ragg, and the Mike Sukar, custodian.
Yeah, both of those guys died.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the police officer, he had to retire because of
his injuries.
Yeah.
So he had just got out of academy and just started, and then that was his last day.
Yeah.
So that was pretty bad.
Yep. But luckily, I mean, no kids died in this, but it's still a tragedy.
Yeah, I don't really think – I know it's bad, and I know she was shooting kids, but I really don't think she was trying to kill none of the kids. I mean, you know, she made a comment about the custodian, you know, that he was always out there telling them kids what to do, and he didn't like – she didn't like the way he was talking to them, I guess, and she probably saw it all the time because she went to school there, you know, up until 74.
Yeah.
So this is only 5 years later. So,
she knew what was going on there.
Yeah, and, you know, so she had always said, you know, she didn't like the way people were young, you know, because she didn't like her – said her dad always cussed her, and people – and she didn't – basically, she didn't like nobody is what she said, you know, so – I don't know if she's like acting like she was taking up for them, but she's shooting them anyway. But I don't know. Like, I think she was shooting to kill the adults, but I don't really think she was wanting to kill no kids.
Man, now she did say that she liked she would shoot the kids and watch them wiggle on the ground.
Yeah. Now, I ain't gonna say she didn't shoot them on purpose, but I don't think she was trying to kill them.
Yeah, but she could. I think she could have killed them if she wanted to.
Oh yeah, I do too. Plenty of them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they just it was fresh batch, just keep coming out of the cars. You know, people dropping them off and leaving, don't know what's going on.
All right, now Brenda was tried as an adult and pled guilty to 2 counts of murder and assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, she, you know, she was going to go to trial, and they were going to try her as an adult, but her lawyer basically is like, they knew they was going to get the max, and the max is going to be life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. So yeah. He talked her into, let's go ahead and plead guilty. At least they'll give you, you know, and I think then she was just sentenced to 25 years to life, but there's always a chance for parole. Yeah. Right.
And like I said, she was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. And in prison, Brenda was diagnosed as an epileptic, and she received medication to treat epilepsy.
Yeah,
and depression.
Right, and see that epilepsy thing, that was like a frontal lobe, and that was from that bicycle wreck.
Yeah,
at least that's where they think it was from.
They determined that to be from the bicycle wreck.
Yeah, so she had like a brain damage, I guess you would say,
yeah.
from that wreck.
And they say that frontal lobe epilepsy will cause you your executive thinking, is what they call it, to, you know, make good decisions and right from wrong and...
It's kind of like Ramirez when the dresser fell on him, hit him in the head.
Yeah, kind of.
Because he started giving him, you know, seizures and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, it could have been.
So, it could have been something similar.
Could have been. Very interesting. I didn't think about that. Yep. Now, under the terms of her indeterminate sentence in 1993, Brenda, she became eligible for hearings to consider her suitable for parole. She has been unsuccessful for 4 border parole hearings.
Yeah.
And... Very few of those convicted of any murder obtained parole in California before.
Yeah, they don't let anybody out.
Yeah, before 2011. Now, it was at her first border parole hearing. Brenda said that she had been a user of alcohol and drugs at the time of the crime, and that the test shown that she didn't have any drugs in her system when she was taken into custody.
You know, right. Now, wasn't at the first ones when she said she didn't even really remember the shooting?
Yeah.
So... That's why she tried to say she was on all these drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
But then it's like, wait a minute, you tested negative, so I don't think you're trying to pull one on us here.
And then it was at another hearing in 2001, Brenda said that her father had beat and sexually abused her.
Right.
And it was even reported by her mother that, you know, when they lived in that home, they were pretty much sleeping on the floor, on a mattress on the floor, really.
Yeah.
And that Brenda and her father slept together.
Well, they said, you know, they said that it was a three-bedroom house, so they figured the older two kids had their own room, and then her and her dad was in the same bedroom. But then they said, you know, so possibly it was just the same bedroom. Then it was also reported that their bed was just a mattress on the floor. So,
and I'd even heard there was a mattress in the living room.
So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
At this point, we don't really know. All we're getting is her version.
Yeah, this is later stuff coming out at parole hearings.
Yeah, and at this time, I think her dad did deny all this stuff.
In 2009, the parole board ruled that Brenda would be denied parole and would not be considered for the next 10 years. And she would become eligible to have another board of parole hearing in 2019.
Huh.
And
did she have one? Do we know?
Yes, she had one, and she's denied.
Still denied, yep. Right.
And what's crazy about this, some of the victims, these students now are adults, and they show up at these hearings, and they testify at these hearings about what they went through.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That'd be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that...
think about it. It's been 40 years.
Yeah, that one, Charles Miller, the victim, you know, that was shot through the shoulder and came out, that barely missed his heart in the front. Now, he testified at a couple of them. Then, you know, he said he every day he has to look in the mirror at that scar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It never, you know, never ending.
He's actually a probation officer now.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he makes sure that, you know, Brenda stays in prison. He does what he does to make sure that, you know, justice is served.
Can't blame him.
Now, getting to what Brenda said, you know, the day the reporter called her house, you know, when she said, "I don't like Mondays."
Yeah, that was a big deal. And I think they probably played that over and over and over.
Yeah, they probably played on the news and even said it a lot. But that got around, and Bob Geldof, he's the lead singer for the Boomtown Rats. He was inspired by the events that happened that day, and he wrote a song called "I Don't Like Mondays." You know, if you think about it, it's just first time I ever heard it and didn't know about this case. I thought it was just like, you know, something you didn't like Mondays.
Right.
And you just want to hang at home.
Yeah.
And shoot the whole day down.
Like everybody else, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was written after her events that day. And this song spent 4 weeks in the UK's number one slot, and it was also popular in the United States. And the local radio station in San Diego refused to play it on the air.
Oh, I'm sure. It's a little touchy there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Bob Geldof, you know, he's pretty famous to me. I knew him more as the guy who played Pink in Pink Floyd's The Wall, the movie, than I did essentially for the Boomtown Rats. And then later, you know, he was one of the big pushers behind Live Aid concerts.
Yeah.
So for him, you know, he was a pretty big deal in about this time. I guess, what, The Wall came out in 82?
Yeah.
So this was right after that. So yeah, right in those years, he was a pretty big deal.
Yep. Now, Dale, there is a plaque and a flagpole. They were erected at the Grover Cleveland Elementary in memory of the shooting victims. But this school closed in 1983, and along with another dozen other schools around the city that was, I guess, due to declining enrollment.
Right. Yeah, I saw that plaque online, but I saw one where it was in, like, not in the ground, but on the ground, and another photo of it on a little brick pole. So I wonder, is it still there?
It's probably, I assume it's still there. It's a neighborhood now. There's houses there.
Yeah, lots of houses.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if it's still there, if when they built the neighborhood, they took it out and put it somewhere else.
Yep. And later on, the school was leased to other charter and private schools. And from 2005 to 2017, the old Grover Cleveland School housed the Magnolia Science Academy. It was a public charter middle school.
Right.
And it served students grades 6 to 8.
So, and then, well, I guess after 2017, it was sold, and I guess it was demolished and housing put in there.
Yep.
Yeah, so now if you look up on Google Earth, you cannot see the school.
No.
Because I was trying to look today to see how far it was.
Dale, in 2005, a San Diego district deputy attorney cited an incident of self-harm from 4 years earlier when Spencer's girlfriend was released from jail, as showing that Brenda was psychotic and unfit to be released. And this self-harm is commonly reported as scratching the words courage and pride into her own skin. But Spencer corrected this during her parole hearing and, you know, saying that it reads unforgiven and alone.
And it was written in runes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that clip.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yep. And just to clarify again, you know, in 2009, the board again refused her application for parole and ruled it would be 10 years before she would be considered again.
She's eligible for a parole suitability hearing in September of 2021.
Yep. And I have seen articles and stuff that her lawyers now are pretty confident she may have a chance to get out this time. But as of February of 2021, yep, she remains imprisoned at the California Institute for Women. That is Brenda Ann Spencer, and a female mass shooter.
The first female.
Yep, first female mass shooter.
Well, you know, I guess she wanted to be famous.
Yeah, she got it.
I was wondering if she ever got that Burger King meal.
I don't know.
But I do wonder about that. Yeah. But yeah, I always wondered if she ever got that Burger King meal. And, you know, at least she could ask for cheese. You know, she's going to give up. She got a Whopper with cheese.
Yeah. But there are a lot of YouTube videos on this and a lot of YouTube clips from the time showing her arrest and different things. So it's pretty interesting to watch.
Pretty wild being stuff, man.
Being the first female school shooter.
You know, it was kind of funny that later Geldof mentioned that Spencer had actually wrote him saying, you know, she was glad that he had done it because it made her famous. And he said, you know, that's not really a good thing to live with.
That's it.
It's like, wow.
You know, he has to think about it every once in a while.
Right. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Yep. All right, Dale. We are going to get out of here.
All right, man.
We want everyone to be safe. Please be careful and always be aware of your surroundings.
Because the next episode could be about you.
This is
the Crack House Chronicles.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.